Welcome to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a serialized novel by Samuel Ligon, published for the first time in The Inlander and broadcast by Spokane Public Radio. Miller Kane is made possible by Sprint and The Inlander. Previously on Miller Kane, while Lizzie has been in jail, charged with assault for shooting her estranged husband, Connor, Miller has done everything to keep 8-year-old Carlene safe. But Lizzie has made a deal with Connor. Drop the charges against her, and the two of them can share in the massive family fortune that Carlene is set to inherit. Miller, though, is not about to give up the girl. He and Carlene are in Missouri, helping in the aftermath of a massacre that left 500 dead. And Carlene is spending the day with one of the town's surviving kids. Now, here's author Samuel Ligon.
Chapter 8, Part 5. He dropped Lizzie near the square in Springfield and made plans to meet the following day, but that didn't mean he'd show up. Back at the motorhome, there was kitty litter all over the floor, Waffles pacing and meowing, demanding food. Miller fed him and did the dishes, then walked to the creek with a beer. Halloween was 3 days away, and Carlene had not mentioned a costume. She'd want to stay in Marquette, but that wasn't going to happen. Miller had friends in Des Moines where they could stay a few days, trick-or-treat, then head east where no one would find them. He took off his shoes and walked in the cool creek water, drinking his beer. Lizzie had been calm on their drive, transactional, hollowed by the screaming, roaring, banging, and clanging of jail, not to mention her separation from Carlene. But she hadn't thought through the implications of what Connor wanted, the blood test he'd mentioned months ago. Now it was clear why he wanted it. "She's not mentioned by name in the will," Lizzie said. "She's only referred to as the great-granddaughter. And if she's not the great-granddaughter..." "Connor gets the money," Miller said. "That's what he seems to think," Lizzie said. Her hair was short and jagged. She looked every one of her 43 years, deep lines etched into her forehead, but still beautiful, especially to him. Still, something had changed between them. He had obligations now, and her calmness was disturbing, layered over delusion. "But if she's not blood," Lizzie said, "Connor will share the wealth." "Sure he would." "And I'll share if it goes the other way," Lizzie said. Everybody sharing Carlene's money, everybody taking a piece of her. Lizzie had to be crazy not to see the threat. And why shouldn't she be after all that time in jail? "Campbell's looking at the will," she said. "So are Connor's attorneys." "Attorneys?" Miller said. "More than one?" "It doesn't matter," Lizzie said. "I just want my life back with Carlene." This was the delusion, that they could get their lives back. If the will was settled in Carlene's favor and the blood test proved Miller to be her father, no way would Connor walk away from that money. Whatever Lizzie had agreed to, Carlene would have to agree to as well, and so would Miller if he was her father. In which case, Connor might get nothing, a possibility he must have considered. The fight would go on and on, or maybe something would happen to Carlene before the will could be resolved, Connor arranging a car accident to kill her, Carlene swallowing poison or choking on a chicken bone so that Connor would become the sole heir. Miller didn't share this worry with Lizzie. After being locked up for months, her last few days had been a frenzy, calling Connor, overcoming her revulsion. "Which wasn't easy," she said, "to be in the same room with him, negotiating while he pretended to pity me. But I knew what I was doing, and I was pitiful. But I made the deal, and he dropped the charges because it was only about Carlene for me." "But why would you give him anything?" Miller said. "I just told you why." "But what if he is her father?" Miller said. "What difference does it make?" The thought of Connor hovering around Carlene made Miller sick. All Lizzie wanted was her daughter back. Miller understood. But Connor was as dangerous as ever, maybe more so since Lizzie seemed incapable of seeing the threat in him, even as she remained repulsed, scrambling to SeaTac and across the country with him stuck to her, the way he was going to stay stuck until the blood test was done. But the blood test wouldn't tell them anything, or whatever it told them wouldn't make any difference. I did it because you wouldn't listen to me, she said. So it was all Miller's fault, everything, the shooting, her bad marriage, Connor coming after Carlene. I couldn't have her here any longer, Lizzie said. I told you that. As if working the massacre made any difference when the shooters were everywhere. Not that they were working the massacre. They were here to help, and they were helping. Or they were here because there was nowhere else to go, and because they had to be here still. So you're just going to hand her over, Miller said. And Lizzie said, why do you pretend not to understand? It's a blood test, that's all. And if she's his, Miller said, he'll keep her as close as he can. Is that what you want? Connor weaseling into her life, your life, trying to control her and her money? I appreciate what you've done, Lizzie said. I really do. But this is none of your business. Of course it's my business, Miller said. And Lizzie said, it's not. Carlene is my business, Miller said. Listen, Lizzie said, whatever happens, Connor and I will share the money. None of this matters. Everyone will get plenty. It's not yours to share, Miller said. It's not yours either, Lizzie said, and I don't care anymore. I just need to see her. I need to hold her and take her home. She needs that too. Lizzie had every right to see her daughter, under certain conditions. Miller drove them back to Springfield and told her they could meet in town the next day, but that Connor couldn't come anywhere near them. Lizzie agreed. Miller would be watching, he said, and if Connor appeared, they were gone. He didn't tell her he and Carlene might not show up at all if something felt wrong. That's what he had to figure out, how to protect Carlene if Connor came for her in the open, or if someone else came for her, with a gun, say. He finished his beer in the creek and put on his shoes. Lizzie didn't realize that Carlene had a home, with Miller and Waffles, here or wherever they'd land. Maybe they could raise her together. He'd get a place in Skagit County, and she'd stay with him half the time, and they'd drive to Mesa Verde in the summer, and Jamestown, and Cape Cod. But he had to know she was safe first, that Connor couldn't hurt her. That's what Lizzie couldn't guarantee, now or in the future, the very fact that she'd made a deal revealing how poor her judgment had become. Still, Miller wouldn't keep Carlene from her mother, unless there was no other way to keep her safe. His phone rang, Carlene calling for Miller's crust recipe. Are you having a good time? He asked, a stupid question. Yes, she said. They should have had Fiona here in the motorhome, away from the dead kids. He gave Carlene the crust recipe and told her he'd pick her up in the morning. Did my mom call? She said, and Miller said she did. She sounds good, too. I'll tell you about it tomorrow. He had no idea what he'd tell her. He had a lot of thinking to do. He spent the last night of his life imagining a future with Carlene in which everyone was okay somehow. Carlene's Notebook. We made pie and hamburgers and jello and waxed beans. You would have hated it all, Mother, as would Narcissa. Fiona and Tammy asked where you were. Gone, I said, and they looked down. I didn't mean it that way, but I didn't know what else to say. I know you don't want us here, but we have to be. The dead kids are here, and so are the ones that were left. I told Miller that, and he said, do you feel dead? And I said, no. And he said, do you feel like you owe them something? And I said, I don't know. We all owe them something, he said, not just you. You don't have to do everything, he said. I'm not, I said. You can just be a kid, he said. I've seen Miss Ellen 2 times. It's okay to cry, she said. It's okay to be mad. Look for the helpers, you always said. You meant police officers and firefighters and teachers if I was in danger. They're everywhere here, and I'm one of them. I still cry, but not like before. Who did this? I said, and Miller said, we don't know. Or we know, but the papers won't say. It's like they want to erase him. We went to Mass 2 times and the New Day Church 1 time. I want to go every day, but Miller says we have to rest. Fiona and I made dead dolls and took them apart. It felt wrong to make them and wrong to take them apart. I know it was wrong what I said about you. I want to tell Father Mike. He puts his hand on my head to bless me. First at the animal session, then with the dolls today. I can feel it run all the way through me. That's why, Mom.
You've been listening to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a novel by Samuel Ligon, published in weekly installments by The Inlander, with archived audio at SpokanePublicRadio.org/MillerKane. Our theme music is by Indian Goat. If you're just hearing Miller Kane for the first time and want to get caught up, you can now find it as a podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and the NPR One app. Subscribe for a new chapter-long podcast each Thursday from now until the novel's conclusion. I'm your producer, Chris Messini. Join us next week for the latest episode of Miller Kane.